reconvening the meeting, facilitated discussion of housing policy. Director Gladhill will be leading the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Last week, it was determined that we had some extra time capacity to bring on at least one additional work session topic. So we thought that this would be a good fit. We've had lots of different housing-related conversations. I wouldn't expect to solve any housing policy today, but do want to give a little bit of a roadmap of some upcoming discussions related to housing. Perhaps there is some direction you could provide in a couple key topics as we start to determine what housing proposals that we get at the staff level do need to make it to the City Council work session format. As I mentioned before, we can't physically take every proposal that we get at a staff level to the council or the EDA, so we're trying to develop what that policy looks like in terms of what are your priorities, what does that process look like, and make good use of your time as well. So we've got a couple staff recommendations at the end as well for your consideration. A couple things to think about as I walk through some of the things that are upcoming. Think about what are things missing from the list. What are things that are on the list that should come off? Perhaps there are some recommendations, some suggestions that make sense, but are not one of your priorities, and you don't need to spend time working on those. And then more importantly, what types of projects are you okay with us bringing forward, whether it's affordability, 4D, design, things of that nature? And then more importantly, what are some projects that we should refrain from bringing to your attention? Regardless, we're going to continue to improve how we report to you, especially in that EDA status memo. We do try to bring forward, here are all the inquiries we get. Here is the staff recommendation. If you do feel differently from the staff recommendation and you do want to bring it forward, if two of you sponsored that to come forward, we would bring that forward regardless. So here's a brief snapshot of some discussions that have some sort of housing component to them. Next week at your EDA meeting, you'll see a couple updates of note. As you know, we sat in this room, had a work session about Villa del Coronado and 4D1 request several months ago. That was, I want to say, July of last year. There wasn't enough support to craft a policy. We did follow up with another staff memo to you all. Villa Del continues to bring forward this request. So we do need to spend some time with them next week, either go or no go in that 4D request. What I would summarize, and I'll get to this in a slide in a second, but it feels like there was some mixed reviews, but certainly not enough support to bring that forward in its current form. I'll get to that in a second. The Brooklyn Boulevard plan and several stages is going to bring you a lot of really good market data. Kara Donovan, one of our senior planners, is in the back here. And it really is not only important for the Brooklyn Boulevard plan, but broader housing market conditions as well. I'll mention in a second. Same for the Northwest growth area. Quarter two of this year will be a big year in terms of market data and what this whole AMI, area median income, really means. And then we get into some project specific. Later this year, we will, if there's enough support to bring forward, ACER has suggested a number of housing policies and programs. Some staff supports, some does not. We've kind of focused that to three or four items that ACER has requested that the city consider. I'll get into that in a second as well. We're not here to debate those specific items. Just want you to be aware of that here today. You know that anti-displacement along the Blue Line extension is a big topic for all of us as well. In the first half of this year, we will bring some recommendations forward in that regard. And then the mixed income policy, our mixed income priorities and policies, I think are really the big ticket that we need to focus on in terms of how do we decide what projects come forward, what do not. We have our existing mixed income policy that says for a market rate project, there shall be a minimum percentage of affordable units included in that project, but also flipping that to the priority we hear from you all is, we want to see more market rate projects, not exclusively affordable, and so how do we make those two work together? And then finally, our own CLIC, Community Long Range Improvement Commission, has a number of suggestions around housing as well. So the first bucket I'll focus on is really trying to inform you of the of the data that you're about to receive to make some good decisions. So I'm not looking for any specific action here today, but I want you to be aware of some good tools coming forward. I mentioned the Brooklyn Boulevard plan, the land use side of things. What do we want to see, especially in our EDA properties, the market conditions? This team has put together a really good slide deck in terms of what is mixed income, what is AMI for the area, both in terms of what does AMI mean for actual monthly rents per bedroom, but also the anticipated gap it would take to see a market rate project along the corridor and elsewhere. And then also, finally, they've gone through and looked at a number of properties in Brooklyn Park and what is the actual AMI level. So for example, 610 West is often shown as an example of a market rate project with high amenities. And right now, that's showing just shy of 90% AMI. So we're not seeing a lot of 100% AMI in the community, even in our existing properties as well. So that data will be coming to you in a more robust format next Tuesday. We are closed on Monday for the holiday, so your EDA meeting, reminder, is Tuesday next week. The Northwest Growth Area does the same, spends a little bit of time talking about market absorption. How long is it going to take for us to achieve that vision, and what might that level of investment mean as well? The second bucket for tonight is more of the REACT. So these are some things that we would anticipate you should focus on and give us some direction tonight. So first being that 4D1 low income rental classification, taking that 1.25 tax rate and bringing it down to 0.25. The intent is to see some physical improvements or some operational improvement in that property. That isn't always the case when we see that throughout. A lot of these properties qualify because of state or county funding that we have no control over. But what we're being asked is to create a program for those that don't qualify through existing properties. Cities such as St. Paul, Minneapolis, St. Louis Park have created this program that helps properties qualify for this reduced tax rate. What we understand is that council is not fully supportive of this, and there's likely not enough support to create a standalone program. Kind of that last piece, safety net, and that we should focus on the funding programs that already exist, city, state, county. And you can stop me at any time if you want to start to get in these conversations as well. So we've been telling Villa del Coronado and a couple other properties that this create a 4D1 policy to qualify you for that program is not the council's approach. Let's talk about other funding sources that keep more of a market rate property tax rate, and then actually see some more improvements that add value to the property.
Okay, Tim.
Yep.
Mayor, okay. Have we gotten any further clarification on the state's money that was allocated for NOAA? Because it was all that talk and money. Mm-hmm. But when we asked maybe a year ago or so, it was a little confusing what limitations were around it, because that could also be useful rather than 4D.
Correct.
So do we have better answers to give to our property owners here?
Yep, Mayor, Council Member. Yes, the LAHA funds, Local Affordable Housing Aid, the Metro-wide sales tax could apply to this. For rental properties, you can use it up to 115% AMI, so it's even market rate. In fact, so we get an allocation of $900,000 plus, round numbers, so I'm quoting the exact number. Half of that is used to supplement our housing programs, down payment assistance, home improvement loan, senior deferred loans. The other half we can pool in a housing trust fund and accumulate that year over year. That would be a great and actually a better use for existing NOAA properties to do it that way. And we could decide to keep it at that normal 4A property tax classification.
Thank you. Oh, sorry, one more quick question. How long because I see some of your notes coming up here, but for these 41 classifications, how long does that last? Is it a 30-year term?
So, Mayor, Council Member, we get to determine that duration, that length, much like TIF itself. And so how the 4D1 classification works is that it's not so much it's not the assistance that you provide, it's that recorded declaration of restrictive covenant. So if you restrict that rent level for 30 years, they get that 4D1 for 30 years. If that restriction only lasts 5, 10, 15 years, that's as long as that 4D1 would last. And then once it expires, it would go back to that 4A.
Could mention about sometimes this is also new projects like that Aurora's one, like when that kicks in.
Yep, so this can apply for new projects. Anytime you restrict the rent levels to 60% AMI or lower, they can qualify, they can apply through the state and get that classification. Decatur Landing is an example of that. In fact, you know, the Roars proposal that we had, because of those tax credits, they would qualify for that if you would have approved that. So it's not just existing, it's new. And you don't have to do 100% of the units either. You could do a 20% of the units, which is the minimum to qualify for the program. You don't have to do all 100% of the units. So again, our take on the council is that not enough support to do a program as a standalone. If it's part of a bigger mix and they qualify as part of that, that can be acceptable. The mixed income priorities, this is really what we hear from you, is we want to see more market rate projects. And the fact that we've done really well in providing affordable housing for our community, but also the region, and that we need to see more an increased tax base, we need to see more move-up housing for our residents. And so especially in areas where we see concentration of affordable housing, we don't want to see our EDA properties used generally for more affordable housing. That's what we've been sharing with individuals. There's always a couple exceptions. You know, for example, on the Welcome site, we've been working on one parcel for a number of years, 6+ years. So, you know, continuing that trend as like a one-off because it was already part of the discussion. But we have been telling developers that if you're going to come forward on an EDA site, or you're going to ask for EDA assistance, or if you're going to ask for conduit finance, conduit bond financing, it needs to be market rate and then meet our mixed income. So 20% of units can be affordable, but a majority should be market rate. That's not always the popular response in today's market, and we see a large spectrum from north to south in Brooklyn Park as well. Right now, if you look in southern Brooklyn Park, the rent rates don't justify market rate without a significant subsidy. On the northern section, they can get those rents and do it without subsidy. So we're seeing a lot of in-between. And as we think about our scarce resources and where we want to deploy tax increment financing or our LAHA or our other funding for market rate, you know, that might seem a little bit more along the Brooklyn Boulevard corridor. So again, we are creating that message that really you should be a market rate project with some affordable housing, not an exclusively affordable or exclusively market rate. And that's been our message to prospective developers. Sorry, I'm dealing with the head cold today, so if I'm not speaking very well, that's why. A couple other updates. ACER has proposed, like I mentioned, a number of housing policies and programs. Some are still on the list, some we have recommended against. A couple that rise to the top are a just cause eviction ordinance, which is really just stating the obvious that you can't evict tenants for reasons that they shouldn't be evicted for, and then a protected income ordinance, whereby some landlords are precluding rental vouchers and other assistance as income, which is disqualifying them for certain housing. So those are two that staff is interested in learning more on. Both CLIC and ACER have recommended that we establish a housing commission. We would say maybe not a housing commission. We don't have the staff resources to add a commission to our repertoire, but a quarterly tenant coalition is something we could support. Kind of imagining what we do for the property managers coalition that meets quarterly as well. We do see some opportunities for rent assistance on very limited scope because the demand is far greater than any resource we could provide. There have been some other proposals, such as a cap on maximum rent that St. Paul did. We very quickly said we've already talked about that with our council on rent control. We are not interested. So there's a longer list, but these are the four that are rising to the top for future discussion. Again, we're not here to debate that today. But
so we don't need a debate, but I have heard from the community regarding what we're seeing happening in the community. Some people just aren't able to go to work anymore. We will not be going to work, right? And so then we're going to look at, there's going to be a rent issue. People are going to just be missing rent. I don't know if it'll be at the same level as what we saw with the pandemic, right? But I do see a number of people having issues with that. And I don't know if that's something that we can look into or see if there's any funds available for that or what we can do with some of those housing funds. But I do think that given the situation we're dealing with, I've heard from a number of people that people are going to be missing rent in the next few months just because they can't get a paycheck. So I think we should probably see if there's ways to help mitigate that what that looks like. I get there's a number of issues that people can bring up around that, right? But I don't think we want a number of families without housing. Can I say that?
Yep.
That's a really, really good point. And some people might have lost a family member who was working and helping pay for rent and other bills. Is there any programs through Hennepin County either for some of this, like emergency assistance, things that we might be able to offer, but also point residents towards resources?
Mayor, council member, the county does have some emergency rental assistance. It's pretty limited, and oftentimes just can't make that connection, but it is there. I mean, those are truly severe emergency situations, so we can continue to have those conversations. We talked about that a lot with Huntington Place and the likely displacement that was going to occur there, and there was some limited use there. To the mayor's point, we can bring forward, I don't know that we're going to get it next week, but we could talk about emergency rent assistance because of what's going on in society today. It's already been talked about a little bit at a staff level. We've done this before, and the dollars that were allocated were gone in like a week. So I think it depends on how we craft this a little bit and tailor it pretty narrowly. And then also with this assistance, especially with the amount of scrutiny going into this, having proper underwriting and oversight. And we have great staff to do that on, you know, single grants right now, but it would be another level of expertise we need to bring on. They would just take a percentage of that amount, and we do that with our business loans already. So it's a program that we could design if the council desires. It's certainly something we can pencil in for our February EDA meeting.
I think narrowly focusing on families with children, you know, maybe elderly folks like that, right? Because I understand the environment in which we exist. So I think it would need to be designed around certain types of dependents that are in no position to control certain factors that we're dealing with right now.
Yep. Understood. Blue Line anti-displacement, you got a very detailed update several months ago. That'll be coming forward in the coming months or at some point this year. ACER was able to secure some dollars on the first pilot program, and so we'll probably need to be in front of you in February. They do have an ask for a match from the city as part of that. But that was both programs, dollars, and policies. So we will be coming back in the very near future on anti-displacement in general. And then our CLIC commission, a couple recommendations that have risen to the top. Again, this idea of a housing commission, I think we pivoted to that quarterly tenant coalition instead. But CLIC is also very interested in proactively recruiting senior housing development for the community as well. So they've been asking some good market data. We presented at their last meeting to talk about what tools are available. And so we'll be kind of following their process a little bit of how they want to encourage that, which will likely get routed through our EDA. CEA. So I don't know that this is immediate, but it is a priority for our CLIC, and so we'll make it a priority for staff to bring forward as well. So back to the decide. What are we deciding here today? You know, looking at the list, what needs to be added or removed, and then in terms of projects, what types of projects are you comfortable moving forward? What projects should we exclude? I mean, you can just give us a thumbs up on kind of the staff understanding that I outlined previously, or if you want to give any other direction to staff and how to field some of these development proposals, we are all ears. So didn't have as much time to prepare a more robust strategic planning session around it, but seeing if there's any trends here today in a simple discussion. With that, I'll stand for any questions.
Couple questions. First, can we have a waiver for projects, especially in certain areas of the city where we want more market rate and not have them need to do the mixed income housing? So say they wanted to do something on Broken Boulevard. It's going to be challenging already to get the financing for it, and then asking them to do the low income affordable units in there makes it even more challenging. So could we provide waivers for projects that are in disproportionate areas where it's harder to get that work to pencil? That's one question. The second question related to CLIC and the senior housing, are they talking about 55 plus senior housing campuses? There's broad definition of seniors, so like what? Can we get a list of what senior housing we have already, including co-ops, so we have an understanding of what's in the city? I know St. Therese wants to expand here at Brooklyn Park, so it'd be great to talk to them. And then the third question is, on none of this do I see anything about commercial as far as like retail and restaurant, which I know our community is always asking for. Can we put a dedicated effort to try to attract? I mean, I know someone needs a Ross Dress for Less. It'd be great for her to have it in the city. But we don't have a lot of great retail hubs. I mean, we have stuff, but we're really still lacking on retail centers with more sit-down restaurants, not necessarily so much fast, casual, or drive-through, or just strip malls. So,
Mayor, council member, on the waiver to mixed income policy, yes, we can define geographic areas. We can exclude, you know, if it's in this area, we'll exclude you from that. So that is a discussion we can have. Pretty sure that was the first question I got asked before I even started was, all right, time to update the mixed income policy. And I don't think we want to get rid of it, but I think we can tweak it from there as well. In terms of what is CLIC's plan for senior housing, you know, we've just been educating them right now in terms of what is AMI, what are the tools, what are the different types. I think we'll continue to narrow that focus a little bit. And part of what we did do with that presentation is what is here. Both the Northwest Growth Area and the Brooklyn Boulevard area have a market study that talks a little bit about senior housing, and we'll drill deeper into that. So yes, that'll definitely be part of the equation. We're always trying to fill the gap, not be a traditional developer. And then in commercial, restaurants and shops, yes, that is definitely part of our work. Things that are happening already, the Northwest Growth Area Plan, the biotech specifically, but also just efforts we're doing at different real estate events and expos. This topic is focused on housing. We are putting even more energy into retail recruitment as we speak.
Thank you.
We might have room for more retail hubs if we got rid of some of these dang parks. We have them everywhere.
Just burn them to the ground.
But anyway, there I go again. Sorry. Just a quick question. I know we're not here to discuss it, but on the ACER suggestions, the what was the top one? Where did they go? Just Cause Eviction. Have they provided, I've had conversations with them about this, and they talked about their, you know, they passed it like in Brooklyn Center or something. Is there any evidence, or have they come through with any results or data? They have promised that, and I've not seen it yet. And I'm not blaming them. I have not called them to ask for it either. But Have they provided that to the city?
A mayor, council member, I don't recall if they've provided me data on how many evictions it's prevented. We just have to think about what that looks like a little bit. What I would say is this isn't that different than our tenant notification ordinance we already have on the books. Now it's just defines of what is just cause for eviction. I will say just having that tool in our conversations with property managers, anecdotally, I can tell you prevents some evictions. Can I quantify that? I don't know that I can quantify that, but just in organic conversations I've had personally with property managers, it does get them to think about how they go about that. And we direct them of, is what you need. Maybe you do have a just cause. If you're not paying your rent, you know, you're subject to being evicted, but it gives us an opportunity to redirect and refer to other resources.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Okay, so here are my questions. So in regards to ASRS, I'll start there. So are there other organizations that should be part of this conversation? And I'm not asking you to answer that. That's just my question. I don't really know what protected income means. So can you give me a definition of that?
Yeah.
I'm quite clear on that.
Yep, mayor, council member, and I might get the term slightly incorrect, but really this is landlords that are not counting rental vouchers and other assistance as income. And since it's not shown as income, they can disqualify them from housing.
Oh, I see.
So I think it's actually source of income protection is what it's called. So that's that piece. And then I do want to touch on the other organizations being part of the conversation. Yes, including property managers, too, who are going to be impacted on that. So John Canara, our Housing and Redevelopment Coordinator, has been talking about that a lot as we have these conversations with ACER. There are other nonprofit organizations out there as well that should be part of this conversation that do the same work. And it's probably more of a coalition of these partners that respond to this as we go along.
And then when you talk about AMI, like for places specifically, when we do AMI of some of our smaller, you would put 89%, how do we understand, because by number, right, that percentage changes, you have a median. So how do we, for smaller projects, how do we get that, because it's going to be different, right? That percentage is going to be different. So how do we know that our AMI is serving that area well if we have somewhere like that that's got how many units at? I know we talked about this. We were going to have all the units, some data list of like all the units of all the apartments and all of the housing rentals. And then it was going to say by definition what it was, if it was market, et cetera, combination. But if you have a whole bunch to choose from, your numbers or your median housing is going to be different, right? Because you have a lot. So it's going to change if you have a little. So how do we make sure we're balancing that when we look at AMI? Maybe that's...
Yeah.
Is that clear how I'm asking that?
I think so. Mayor, council member, and if I get off track, certainly let me know. So AMI is defined by HUD and defined mm-hmm. by Metropolitan Council. It's based off of 30%.
Yep.
Of your income, and then they equate that into rent levels, and that's all published, so we know what those
yep.
maximum rents are. And then in terms of how do we determine if we need too much, or do we have too much, is it clustered? We can show maps of census blocks, and we can see concentrations.
Yep.
We have that. I think that's how we make our decisions based off of if we're seeing concentrations, especially if you're seeing opportunity zones and racially concentrated areas of poverty, that's when we know that we have a policy issue that we need to correct, and maybe we want to focus more on market rate.
Okay, so that all may I just continue mm-hmm. this discussion. So my question about that is, I don't want to, it's my hope that because we have in one big development this high AMI, right, this percentage, that we're not going to put something, affordable housing or something to bridge that gap that won't be near that building. That's my concern of like, how do we balance that? And this is kind of a learning thing for me, where there's opportunity for everyone to live everywhere. But if we're seeing those numbers higher in some areas, it just seems like we should have the lower AMI. Do you see what I'm saying?
I think so.
How do we do that as a community?
Mayor, Councilmember, I think that's the whole intent of the mixed income ordinance. So
okay.
Kind of leading with market rate, and we're integrating affordable throughout the community, not
okay.
concentrating it in one area. So hopefully more modern mixed income policies and approaches, and looking at our comp plan and our housing plan, you got to constantly evaluate that and look for clusters. Sometimes it is more of an art than a science, but at the heart of it, our mixed income policy, the Met Council publishes affordable housing needs, and we get to determine how we kind of distribute that throughout. That's the best way I can think to answer that.
Okay, so that's what we'll be working on this year in 2026 to make sure that that...
And ongoing.
Okay, just...
Mayor, councilmembers, may I clarify, just because it's going to play into the Mulberg report, are you suggesting that every neighborhood should have a diversity of income levels
yes.
so that people can live throughout?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Okay. So that's part of that. I'm just understanding how it all goes together. And then my last is, okay, so for our older neighborhoods where we're trying to attract that market rate, is there kind of a formula as who gets there first? Because obviously that conversation has been happening. Is it foolish to think we could have multi-use in those properties where we have retail on the bottom? And I don't know if restaurants are called retail, so bear with me on that. I have a different world of new construction. So is that a good way to look at it? Or is that something we should be talking about where we have the mixed use with walkability, living on top, et cetera?
Yeah. Mayor, council member, I mean, I'll be honest, vertically mixed use is challenging, super challenging, for financing reasons, for a lot of different reasons. And so we at least want to have a mix of uses. And I know that's being talked a little bit about in all the plans that we do. So maybe it's horizontal where you've got a housing project here and a retail project here side by side. We still want to design for future opportunities for conversion. So how you build that ground level, maybe it's housing today that you can convert to retail, to commercial in the future. I don't think we should scale back and not try to attract that, but more likely it's going to be a mix of uses in a block.
I'm thinking specifically of places like Woodbury, for example. They have a really old area, or seasoned, I don't know, I don't like to be called old. But they've done a really, really good job of mixing in all of that. And so I wonder if those are conversations we can have.
May I respond to further, since this is my industry?
Yes.
One of the big challenges that we just faced, period, being Brooklyn Park, it's hard to even attract market rate here.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a challenge
mm-hmm.
Because of the density of affordable housing that currently exists. Mm-hmm. So, and that, along with some of the policies that have happened, like St. Paul's rent control, drove the people who actually fund development, are not the developers typically, they have either traditional lending sources or all sorts of different equity partners. When rent control happened in St. Paul, everyone left Minnesota, so you saw a huge influx into Texas and the Carolinas. They're getting all the market rate right now and affordable, but it basically is, and then high interest rates has created extreme complexity in the development community. Market rate, as it stands, has slowed down so dramatically in the last 4 years in this state. A lot of the market rate developers have tried to pivot to do affordable so they can keep their doors open and keep people employed. So you have really weird conditions here in Minnesota currently. When you add in mixed use, you're asking an investor, again, not the developer. The developer might love the concept and it could be perfect walkable neighborhood. The investor says that's really risky. We either have to condo those out. We prefer, because then that impacts how you're actually going to get the lending for those properties. We'd prefer to have it over here so we can have a traditional loan,
mm-hmm.
whatever that capital stack looks like for the multifamily. There's a lot of push and pull, and right now, for us just in general, we're struggling to get people to do market rate here without some help, just because of the conditions that Brooklyn Park is facing with AMI. And I think that we all recognize we have to do more market rate to get our values up for all the property. But it's already a challenge. some cities like Woodbury have higher density of retail nodes, so they can probably attract it and get it financed significantly easier. Our retail nodes heavily impact development here, and a lot of the retail is in really weird places. Like if you look at 81 with a lot of the retail there, it's not really a city center, it's a thoroughfare. There's a lot of complexity to these things. We did try to, you know, encourage developers to do mixed projects, but it's, the conditions suck. So maybe in 10 years would we have a better opportunity, especially if we can get a biotech innovation district going and have a little bit more people not looking at Brooklyn Park a certain way. We might have a better case for it. It's just really challenging right now. And a developer would most likely walk away if we made it a requirement.
Sure. So here's my question for you then. How do we not leave this part of Brooklyn Park behind while developing?
I think taking out for market rate in particular, I think we're going to have to look at some tools to help finance some of it. Offering free land is great, but helping incentivize people to come and develop it here, especially off like Brooklyn Boulevard, some of the other areas. If we can get retail to be attracted to there, that helps make a better case. But I think taking like the mixed income policy out of some of those areas would be really helpful for people to actually get it financed. When you add in affordable units, it's really hard to finance that project already. And then you're going to tell an investment group, oh, we're also going to put this market rate in a really depressed economic area.
Do we have, is it accessible for this policy for us to review? Or it is going to be created?
Income, it already exists.
Yes. And we'll reevaluate it, too. We'll bring it forward for another separate discussion on mixed income.
Thank you.
Hope that helped in any way.
It just reminds me that it's a challenge, so I'm not scared.
Can't be scared. It's got to be a long conversation about it.
Thank you.
So, to kind of get to what do you need from us? Is there, like, any, in light of all the challenges that we know exist, is there any low-hanging fruit, for lack of a better term, or easier roads to go down than others that we could sort of give our blessing to and get the ball rolling, like, without committing to building tons of low-income housing, or because it seems like that would work, but
Mr. Mayor, Council. So what I'm hearing is still that focus on market rate, perhaps with some waivers on areas that already have concentrations of affordable, and then it's going to take gap financing. And for market rate, we're seeing $5 to $7 million over 25 years, time and time again. If we're seeing vertical mixed use, it's over $10 million, if not two times over. So just knowing that, if your direction continues to be, you know, focus on the market rate for limited EDA assets, land and dollars, we'll continue to prioritize that. And if someone comes forward to us with an exclusively affordable product, we'll say that's not a priority. We're not going to bring it forward unless council asks us to bring it forward because there is some special exception for that particular project. The other piece is the 4G1, I think what I heard is continued. That's not the right tool. That reduces our tax base. We don't have as much control as we'd like to see over that. We would rather see you use our LAHA funds for preservation of NOLA properties than the 4G1 program. I think are the two things that if I walked away with today, I would feel pretty good about.
Could you with the emails that you send with that I'm blind copying each of you or sending individually so we're not quorum busting. Like if you get a query, could you send us just a small like 2-paragraph narrative of this is what we just got?
Yes.
Here's what they're looking for. Just so we can kind of like, well hey, maybe that one is worth considering more. Just so we're aware of what's coming in the door.
Mayor, council, I would say yes. And in fact, we've been trying to do that a little bit better now too. We've been having people fill out what we call a pitch deck. You know, here's our little thing. Here's what we know the council's going to ask for. So you can see that in slide format, and then we can do a little bit of a summary. So it's not just this unnamed developer doing this type of use with a certain amount of subsidy. We do want to provide a little bit more certainty, so in a way that doesn't break quorum. We can track and you can respond, hey, actually, there's something about this that seems interesting. Let's talk a little bit more. You're not bound to it. You're just bound to talking about it and learning a little bit more. So yeah, yes, we can do that.
Thanks.
Going back to the LAHAV funds, it was just as that question came up, it was making me think about the flexibility of those. But maybe that should be one of the questions, too, in terms of there's different ways that could be used for existing affordable, new affordable, and I think that that would help staff get more clarity in terms of, okay, how does this council want to use those dollars? Because it's over $1 million a year, or about $1 million.
And Mayor, Council, just knowing the tools that exist for new development and the amount of need for rehab of existing NOAA properties, I would really say your LAHAV funds should focus on existing and leverage the other tools for new.
Oh, I thought you were saying, sorry.
I know. I guess not.
Councilmember Tran has been up for a while. I don't know if you guys have
seen. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Councilmember Tran.
Sure.
Councilmember Tran? Councilmember Tran?
Yes. I have a question for the staff. According to previously say that they don't count the vouchers or the rent assistant at the income, so make people very hard with those benefit very hard to find a place to stay. What could we do about that to help the resident with vouchers in Section 8?
Councilmember Tran, are you asking what happens if a property does not accept Section 8 vouchers, or?
Yes, yes.
It's a good question. Not every property owner is obligated to accept that voucher. What I will say is a couple things. I mean, this is why we have our new apartment finder that we leveraged with that software provider. Citywide, I think, is the provider. So we always kind of refer tenants that are looking for housing to appropriate housing. But also, this might have a tie into that source of income ordinance, too. So if they're excluding someone just because they have this source of income, that could be a violation of fair housing, or we could strengthen that with the source of income ordinance. I think those are the two tools I would point to at this point.
So how do the city, act on that to help the population? Like, put something in writing to let the landlord know that is not acceptable, or what?
Yeah, so...
Or let the renter know if they deal with that kind of issue, they can go to the city for help.
Yep, Mayor, Councilmember Tran, we do have a renter resources webpage, and then our housing team can do a lot of referrals, whether it's Homeline, the Attorney General. We don't have an ordinance right now that says, landlords, you have to accept Section 8. We would have to look at our source of income draft ordinance, and you'd want to add that as part of that discussion. But right now, it's a little bit more resource referral based. So if we do see issues, we will refer them to proper organizations that can help the tenant further.
Thank you.
Yep.
Oh, that was.
We
you were next?
Yeah, sorry. I don't want to forget.
Councilmember Clancy.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask quickly about Commissioner Lundy had mentioned some funding from the county towards multifamily projects, and he said the money is on the table. If it doesn't get applied for, it doesn't go anywhere. And he was supposed to send us that information of how to apply for it and what it was, but I never got it. I assume nobody else did. Mm-hmm. But we should really try to nail down what those resources are. If it's a couple thousand, 100,000, however we can help those gaps in our multifamily development. And then the other, I don't know if you're involved with CLIC, but the president of Pope, who lived here in Brooklyn Park for 28 years, until not that long ago, he's nationally known on the senior housing level. If CLIC ever wanted to talk to him to ask questions about how it's funded, how it's developed, what the different types are, I'm sure he'd be happy to come back here and meet with residents on that, or council. He knows it in and out.
Awesome.
I just wanted to say yes, I agree to everything you said. The affordable, the 40, everything. Yes, that's where my mind is at. But then I did have a question again, which I think you did answer earlier, but then I'm not going to lie, I was kind of zoning out. The just cause evictions that you said brought forth. We have an ordinance that you said is similar to it, but then what is like the on the paper, like what's the difference?
Yep, so Mayor, Council Member, our tenant notification ordinance is what I was referring to. What that says is when a property changes ownership, within 30 days, the new owner has to notify the tenants of the change in ownership. And then that starts a 90-day clock that if they are evicted without proper cause, they have to provide that dislocated tenant, displaced tenant, with 3 months rent assistance. So we have that, but it's only tied to change in ownership, and it's a shorter time. This would broaden that to you can't evict for, you know, it has to be a just cause anytime, not just change of ownership.
Mm-hmm. And not just for affordable complexes, correct?
Correct.
Any rental properties. Okay. Me personally, just speaking for myself, I would like to take a look at that, the just cause evictions. I think it also provides like accountability towards management, landlords, into documentation, especially with, you know, Huntington and like the ownership being swapped today.
Yep.
I think it would be nice to just have it on paper for protections towards tenants. And I don't even see it as just protections towards tenants. I think it's also protections towards, you know, landlords, management as well to ensure that everything that is going on inside the complexes are being taken, you know, an account of. That's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm taking good notes too, so.
I think we generally, I'm generally in agreement with what you're pointing out, and I think some good points were made here, so I'm generally in favor of dealing with that. They're taking that approach, I guess. I have concerns about the southern area or the older area of Brooklyn Park, and like you said, closing that particular gap, what does that look like? And I'm not sure. We already have a particular legislative agenda, but is it something we need to tweak to make that clear that we are really struggling with this particular gap? But it all, that all ties into a, there's a larger argument there in terms of powers that be, what they think the policy should be, who they're consulting. We're even seeing that with what we're dealing with as a state right now. So, you know, that could be a longer conversation. But that gap is a real thing, and I think that is, you know, if that's the issue, then how do we drive directly at the issue immediately before too much time goes by and we've hard baked in the issues that we're seeing, right? And I think a lot of us have been concerned about this for some time, so.
Interesting. And there, just one point I'll make is we've been working with Villa del Coronado for a while. Now, kind of explaining this is where we think the council's going to go. They're scheduled to be here next week. I think we should at least let them come in still and present kind of what they're running into. And, you know, we can still direct them towards Laja, but I don't want to pull that back. I want to give them the time to say, because they are trying to reinvest and trying to find tools. So I don't want to just cut them off based off of this conversation. We might just look at it through a slightly different lens. So there'll be, just because of timing, our agenda is almost done for next week's EDA agenda. So if it seems like, hey, we told you no 4D1, why are we having this conversation next week? That's why. It's just too far down the road to kind of pull it back.
All right, so if there's no further questions, the meeting is adjourned.
Ta-da!
What?
Thank you,
Tim. Thank you. You're
Shelley. Lifestyle Communities is the real name of the developer. That does 55 plus and seniors, so
that's what I wanted for.